Good morning. Let's continue our talks now on the three stages of the spiritual path. Let's move into the second degree. If you recall, in the first degree, we are diligently learning the letter of truth. We have begun to practice the presence. We are learning contemplation. We are slowly making the transition from man of earth or woman of earth to that person who turns within and really expects their good to unfold from within their own consciousness, from the kingdom of heaven within. And at the end of the first stage, we have the conviction that there is a presence that is with us wherever we go. But now as we move into the second degree, there is much to learn. In the first degree, we learned that the nature of God is omnipresence, omnipotence, and omniscience. We really focused on the nature of this presence. We really focused on, in the first degree, on the nature of God and somewhat on the nature of prayer. We are beginning to contemplate, and maybe we've actually come to the end of our contemplation a couple of times and had an inner experience for a few seconds or even a minute or more. But here in the second degree, we're going to learn something that we have not previously learned. We are going to learn all about the nature of error and the true nature of prayer or meditation at depth or the silence. And so we're practicing the presence, we're trying to remember God throughout the day, we're filling our mind with the letter of truth, we're learning to know some of these statements so well that we only have to pause for a second to remember one, and we are practicing getting quiet and contemplating these truths. Now in the second degree, a whole new area opens up. We are told that this second degree can take 2 to 22 years, which means if you spent a year or so on the first degree, a year or two, you're looking at 24 years. Now, people that do this in 24 months, I guarantee you they've had previous experience, whether they've been in some other spiritual background or whether in some previous life experience, they have done this because it's pretty near impossible for a human being to go from humanhood through the first and second degrees in just 24 months. But there must have been one or two, or he wouldn't have said that. But for most of us, it's going to take a long, long time to break through the layers of humanhood that have evolved over eons of time. So he says, this is the longest stage, and it can take 2 to 22 years. In the second degree, we are living between two worlds. Sometimes we have a glimpse of reality, which happens in our meditation when we attain that silence. But sometimes we're living still in the concepts of this world out here. Sometimes we're living in the illusion, and sometimes we're living for brief moments in reality. We're living between two worlds. Sometimes we live under the law. Sometimes we live under grace. We're finding in the second degree that all this mentally knowing the truth does not work like it once did. We're asking ourselves, what must I do to have this on a more permanent basis? And so we return to the books. Perhaps there's a problem that has come into our experience that just doesn't seem to want to be met. It just isn't budging. And so we go back to the Infinite Way writings or talks, and we discover there's a whole nother part of this message called the nature of error. In the first degree, we were somewhat on a pink cloud for a while, demonstrating the beauties and the harmonies. And we probably were not that interested if we came across any writings on the nature of error. We probably looked at the nature of error briefly or even skipped over it. But here in the second degree, we knuckle down and learn what we must learn. There are several books that are helpful in the second degree, which are The Realization of Oneness, The Art of Spiritual Healing, The Contemplative Life. We'll just stick with those three. There are several more. And so we go back to the drawing board and we decide we really do want to serve God and not mammon. And we take a look at the nature of error. Now, in the Realization of Oneness, where it tells us specifically that this part of our journey can take 2 to 22 years, it says, the secret of meeting error lies in knowing its nature, and the nature of error can be summed up in such words as carnal mind, suggestion, appearance, or hypnotism. And there are a lot of terms. Mental concepts, belief in two powers. You can really go on and on with the terms. But he tells you specifically that you can use any name you want as long as it means nothingness. So he says the nature of error is hypnotism or the carnal mind. And it can be illustrated in this way. If there were a plant in the room where you are now sitting, and if someone hypnotized you, he could make you believe that instead of branches, snakes were growing out of the flower pot, and you would accept and believe it. Through hypnotic suggestion, the hypnotist has taken temporary control of your mind. And because you are apparently unable to act independently, you follow his suggestion to its logical conclusion. A fear of snakes is set up in you, and you run away from them. You may even pick up a knife with which to chop off their heads. All of this is based on the belief that snakes are actually there. So you see, he's introducing the idea, Joel is introducing the idea to us that may be new, which is that error, if you see error, and all of us do to a certain extent, and definitely in this beginning of the second degree, then we are hypnotized by an impersonal source. And so he says, the moment you see God and anything, you are hypnotized. The moment you see a mortal, material world, you are hypnotized. And from then on, there is no possible way to get rid of the appearance. So you see, he's introducing to us here the principles of impersonalization and nothingization. And this is brand new for most of us. The only way to be dehypnotized is to quiet the physical senses, to be still inside, and then spiritual awareness reveals the truth of being, which enables us to see that which is not visible, to hear that which is not audible, to know that which is not knowable with the human senses. Do you see that? We're starting to work with some brand spanking new principles, which we probably passed up before because everything was going so well. Now, he says, your function is not to sit in judgment, but constantly to realize the presence of God. Each time that you are called upon for help, your meditation should embody whatever truth will bring to you the realization of God as all, and the nothingness of the condition, the nothingness of material or mental law. Whether it is the second, third, fourth, or 100th time you are called upon, you meditate. This should suggest to us that here in the second degree, as we begin working with the principles of impersonalization and nothingization, we begin to get results. That is, we are developing the healing consciousness, the Christ consciousness, which meets these problems that are presented. Here in the second degree, somewhere in this 2 to 22 years, we develop the practice of this, the consciousness of this, to the point where others begin to call on us for help. And so here he's saying, when they do, if you sit down and you work with these principles and it's not met the first time, you may have to have a second, third, fourth, or even 100th meditation until it's met. Now, do you see the degree of work that's being presented that you can expect in the second degree? If you're having 100 meditations to meet one problem, that's work. 100 meditations are going to take several days, if not weeks, for one problem. And yet, if we would be free from the belief in good and evil, if we would come into this second degree fully, that's exactly what we're going to have to do. And I have stressed that over and over, that this is going to take work, and that's the reason. So, that's just very briefly an overview. And we didn't go into the principle of impersonalization and nothingization and realization of oneness in any depth, because that's for another talk. This is for the understanding of what the second degree is, and what you can look for, and what you can expect. Now, here in the second degree, we are living between two worlds. As we said, part of the time we're governed by the law, we're living out here in a personal sense of life, and part of the time we're governed by grace, because we're actually starting to have the moment of silence in which contact is made with God within. And so, we're living between or in two worlds, back and forth we go. Sometimes this can be very difficult, very difficult. And he stresses in this book, Realization of Oneness, that in this second degree, in this stage of the spiritual path, life can be very difficult. We're trying to make the transition now from living by the letter of truth to living by the Spirit. We're trying here in the second degree to stop relying on these mental thoughts about truth to actually making that contact with truth within. And so he says in the second degree, it can be difficult because our family and our friends don't know what we're doing. They're not aware of this inner work. And so they may say, oh, you need to go see the doctor. You sound terrible. While we are trying to practice the principle of impersonalization and nothingization, we're trying to come into a higher consciousness so that it can be met on a spiritual level. And they're telling us, no, you need to do this on this material level. And so we're standing in two different worlds, and it can be difficult. So do you see that there can be difficulties in the second degree? There is difficulties in the second degree. There is intensive work with these principles. Something that we weren't doing. We were just sort of skating along on a pink cloud in the first degree. But now we've knuckled down and we're really working. And so Joel tells us that in the second degree, it may be difficult when family members tell us that. But we can't show our impatience because that would be unloving. You see, we have to maintain that loving our neighbor as ourself. In the second degree, we are trying to live up to these principles, which we now have understood if we've listened to the talks and read the books. And I don't know how your books look, but mine are underlined and there's notes in the margins. And there's quotations and stars, and I studied hard. And so in the second degree, we're not yet firmly grounded in all these principles. We're not established in this new consciousness, and so we're trying to hold on to something we haven't completely demonstrated. Here in the second degree, we still have the feeling when a problem comes, why did that have to come to me? I've been studying so hard. But in the second degree, we also begin to see the fruitage of God's government. We start to learn what it's like to live under the government of God. Not all the time, but part of the time. Now, in the second degree, we try to live up to our highest sense of practicing the spiritual principles. We're practicing the presence all the time. We start to meditate more frequently and in earnest. Remember, Joel said that when he started meditation, he practiced 12 times a day for 8 months before he had his first experience. Well, here in the second degree, we are starting to meditate in earnest several times a day because we have learned it's not the truth that we know so much with the mind as the truth that we receive within that carries the power. We're working diligently hard with the principle of impersonalization and nothingization, and we know that that's only half of the picture. That even when we've seen that this problem is an impersonal source of nothingness, that's not enough. We must make this contact within. In the contact, it's dissolved. So, because of that, we're meditating more frequently in order to prove these principles we're working with. We learned that, well, entering the silence at the end of our contemplation is the most important part of our meditation. Here in the second degree, when we become proficient at these principles, doesn't mean we're doing it 100%, it means a lot of the time, the majority of the time, we start to think not just about ourselves or our family, but we start to think about the world and how we can help the world. It's a natural progression people start to reach out to us and we start to feel like maybe we could be of service to the world. We're not quite so self-centered. There's a lot of practice going on. Here in the second degree, we also learn about loving our neighbor as ourselves and God with all of our heart, mind, and soul. Slowly, slowly, we're coming out of the personal sense of life where we practice these principles in order to produce harmony, in order to produce health and harmony and abundance in our own lives. We're starting to practice these principles so that we can love our neighbor as ourself, so that we can be of service to the world or to God. You see, we're moving away from a self-centered existence to a God-centered existence, whether God within or God in our neighbor. More and more, we're sowing to the spirit and not to the flesh. More and more, we're coming out of our judgments as to good and bad as we look out there, because we're learning that if we judge something as good or bad, we have just opened the door to that impersonal belief attacking us in some manner. It's not really attacking us, it's just existing, and we open the door to its existence. It's really nothing personal, but I'm sorry you have the flu. Nothing personal, but I'm sorry that you lost your job, you know. No, it's not really attacking us personally. It just is, and if you open the door to it and you accept it, then you demonstrate it. It shows up in your life. So here in the second degree, we're learning all these new things that we didn't know in the first degree. My goodness, if I look at a person out there and I claim that they're good, a good provider or a good singer or a good loyal friend or a good worker, then I open the door for the opposite, which is that they're a lousy employee, they're a selfish person, they're mean and inconsiderate, they're a power monger, they're a dictator, you see? The minute I've judged, I'm back in the belief in two powers. I'm living under the law, and I'm going to demonstrate it. So here in the second degree, we learn, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to really put my heel on this. I'm going to have to meditate more often, where I can get the release from that mind, from that world mind, and function from the mind which was in Christ Jesus. Here in the second degree, as we go about our business throughout the day, whenever we catch ourselves sliding back into judgment, we're going to have to take that 2-minute meditation, disappear into a bathroom or around a tree somewhere, or on a bench or something. We're going to have to do this. This is where we step out of the world mind, the belief in two powers that judges everything, that atom mind that gave names to everything. Here in the second degree, we realize there's a mountain of work to do. And we see how far short we're falling from really practicing and living up to all these principles which we are learning. But we trudge ahead on this road. Here in the second degree, this is when we begin to touch that Christ within, to actually receive some impartations, whether a message, a voice, a still small voice, an impression, a feeling of a presence, of warmth, a peace that passes understanding. We learn here in the second degree, this and only this is what dissolves that mental image. And so here in the second degree, we learn it's not enough to know that it's a mental image, that it's an impersonal source, and that it's a nothingness. That won't dissolve it. What dissolves it is the contact we make with that Christ within. And I have searched and searched and searched in over the years, and I have never seen a better explanation of that than this. So if you are here in the second degree, and you want to know what will dissolve these mental images, this hypnotism, the whole key, and I suggest you read it again and again and again and again and meditate and meditate and meditate until you see it. It's on page 67 and 68 of The Art of Meditation, The Art of Spiritual Healing, and it is the chapter called What Did Hinder You? All right, now let's look at it, because it's short, but it is power-packed. This is the whole key to what you should be learning in this second degree. Well, part of what you should be learning. Now listen. If you prefer, the word temptation can be used in place of hypnotism. When you feel ill, you might look upon that as a temptation coming to you for acceptance or rejection. It is the only way you can reject a temptation is to recognize it as the arm of flesh or nothingness. No matter what is brought to you, whatever its name or nature, no matter who it is, the carnal mind is not the opposite of divine mind. And you are not looking for a divine mind to do something to a carnal mind. The minute you have made the carnal mind a nothingness, the arm of flesh, you no longer have two powers. And you can do just what it says in Scripture. Rest in His Word. You can rest in this Word, waiting for the Spirit of the Lord God to be upon you. And when it comes, it breaks the hypnotism. You see that? Now, listen. Joel says, for years after I had learned to recognize that all forms of sin, disease, lack, limitation, depression, or whatnot are mesmeric sense or hypnotism, the puzzle was to discover how to break that hypnotism. What could I do for a person? A hypnotist just snaps his fingers and his subject awakens, or he wills him to awaken. This I could not do because on the spiritual path I am not permitted to use physical or mental power. No, not by might nor by power, but by my spirit. It was then that I discovered the scriptural passage which you will find throughout all my writings. The stone was cut out of the mountain without hands. By the time I had spent some months puzzling on its obscure meaning, the answer began to be apparent. The weapon against error, our offense and defense, is something that is not physical or mental. No action, no words, no thoughts, only the awareness of God. Now, I'm going to shorten that for you, but first I want to point out how he said he meditated on this scripture, the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, for many months. Lest you think you can do this in 11 or 12 months, I'm going to move through the second degree and arrive at the third degree by the month after next. No, that's not going to happen. We have stressed before in the talk and actual experience that each one of these scriptures, each statement of truth, must be taken into your consciousness and meditated on until the inner meaning is revealed and you have the actual experience of it. So that's what he did. For many months he puzzled on what this could mean. The stone was cut out of the mountain without hands. And finally he had the actual experience of it. And it was this. your weapon, my weapon, against all error, that which breaks the hypnotism, is something that is not physical nor mental. And to have the experience of that something will require no action, no words, and no thoughts, only the awareness of God. As you carry this out in practice, watching the stone being formed in and of your consciousness, while you stand to one side as a witness or a beholder, eventually a state of peace will come. Then you will catch a glimpse of God as is, not a power over anything, just God is. You begin to understand that no power does anything to anyone, and you become a beholder as reality begins to appear. All problems fade out in proportion, in exact proportion, as you become a beholder. You develop this ability to be quiet, to behold, and to witness divine harmony unfold. And because of the principle of oneness, if you have a patient, your patient experiences this harmony too. The principle behind this process is that inasmuch as the activity of the human mind is the substance of the hypnotism, when the human mind is not functioning, there is no more hypnotism. And when you are not thinking thoughts or words, when you are in a stillness, the human mind is stopped. The hypnotism is gone. When you experience this, you are going to feel something which transcends the human dimension of life. Now, that is the most fantastic, short, simple, sweet, to the point explanation of how you practice the principle of impersonalization, nothingization, and realization of oneness, which breaks the hypnotism or meets the problem. And if you were listening, you obviously heard what I heard, which is that you don't do it. You become a beholder as something happens to you in your meditation. The only point that you do is you know that this that is appearing is a temptation or hypnotism or mesmerism or mental image. And then you rest right there. It has no power, it's nothingness, and you rest. That's where you rest after knowing those two truths. And you wait upon the Lord. You rest there until something happens within you. And you feel a movement or a quickening. God announces itself. And that point of contact is where the hypnotism is broken. You see, all of this we're learning in the second degree. We didn't know any of this in the first degree. But here in the second degree, this word beholder keeps coming up and up and up. This is where we learn to live life as a beholder in the second degree. And remember, this is taking place for most of us over several years. This transition from the first degree to the end of the second degree takes years. And it varies with each person. It could be 5, 10, 20, even 30 if you did not understand that there was a progression, a natural progression. So, over a long period of years, many years, at least 2 to 22, we are learning all of these things about spiritual healing, about making the contact, about not using might or power, about becoming still and listening for the still small voice, about how to live between two worlds, how to function in both. We're learning how to use the language of the day without it having an effect on us. In other words, someone can come up to us and say, boy, I don't know about those politicians. And we're able to say, yeah, I know what you mean, and it doesn't affect us because inside we're knowing the truth at the same time. We're living this dual life in two worlds. You see, there's a whole lot going on. We're really evolving and growing and changing and making this transition. Here in the second degree, we hear that word over and over, being a beholder. We learn how to walk out here, sort of looking over our shoulder, being a beholder as God performs that which is appointed for us to do. But also in our meditation, in our meditations, we're learning not so much to know the truth with the mind anymore. We're learning to do that for a little while, but then we're learning to become still so that we may be a beholder within as God happens. So it's all about being a beholder here in the second degree. We begin to have the actual contact with the Christ within, that Christ mind. We can't talk about it. We learn that we have to take it down into Egypt and hide it for a couple of years. It's stressed over and over in the writings. You don't need to talk about it. If you're talking about it to your friends and neighbors, you don't have it. You have a concept of it. You're still in the first degree. But here in the second degree, if you do have this, you are making this contact, you learn also here in the second degree, it must be secret. It must be sacred. And so you hide it. In the first degree, you're bubbling over with joy. You're on that pink cloud. You want to tell the whole world, and you probably do talk up a storm, and nobody believes you or wants what you have anyway. But in the second degree, you learn, this is secret. This is sacred. I want this contact more than I want people to put me on a pedestal or more than I want to save anybody. Yes, I care about the world here in the second degree, and I'd like to be of service, but now I'm realizing that that's not something I can do. At best, I can be a beholder as it happens through me. And so I'm going to keep still about this and practice these principles until I've proved them to the point where they're showing forth in my life. Then, of course, if somebody says, "What are you doing? You seem to be calmer. You seem to be at peace." Everybody here on the job on Thursdays or Fridays when we have this push to get the product out the door is all frenzied. But you stay calm. How come? And if we find out they're really serious, then we can give them one of the beginning books, such as Living the Infinite Way, Practicing the Presence or something. Okay? Then if they want more, we can take them to a tape group. Slowly we can begin to share. Alright, so here in the second degree, we learn to keep this thing secret and sacred until it shows itself forth. We learn that we are living our entire life as a beholder. Here in the second degree, we have learned that a mind imbued with truth is a law unto our experience. But now we're beginning to suspect that truth is not the truth we know with the mind. It's that contact, what we receive after we make that contact. So, those that dwell in the secret place of the Most High means those that are making that contact. In the first degree, we thought it was all the mentally knowing the truth that we were doing. Here in the second degree, we're easing up on that a little. Yes, we still know the truth throughout our day, and we begin our meditations that way, but we're seeing that it's the contact we make that's the important thing. Here in the second degree, if we come in to a problem, or someone brings them a problem, we start our meditation by mentally knowing every truth that we know about impersonalizing and nothingizing and the oneness of God, or the omnipotence of God. But here in the second degree, we learn that that's only a way to reach that moment of rest, of resting back on the sea of spirit. Here we learn that the real work, or that which really breaks the hypnotism, is that contact, that spirit. Here in the second degree, we begin to, towards the end of the second degree, we begin to really, well, the principles are second nature. The example that Joel has given us through the years over and over and over again is that when you learn the multiplication tables, you don't have to relearn them. You don't have to think about them. The example he gives us is 12 times 12 is 144. You don't have to sit down with a pen and paper and work that out. You see 12 times 12, or you hear 12 times 12, and automatically your mind says 144. Well, he says, you practice these principles so long and so carefully and diligently here in the second degree that when error touches you, your mind automatically sees impersonal nothingness, and you pause for a rest, a moment of rest. It's fast, it's automatic. That's how he could meet 300 cases of flu in one day. He didn't sit down and have a half an hour meditation 300 times in one day, and you know that. Here in the second degree, you discover what it was he was doing. He had developed his consciousness over a period of many, many years to where when error touched it, it was automatically met, just as knowing 12 times 12 is 144. And so all that happens here in the second degree. We find that without taking much thought on it, because we've been so involved in practicing these principles, we take a look, and hey, our companionship's really good here. Our supply is adequate, or even has 12 baskets full left over. And our health is pretty good. And we weren't working on any of these. In the first degree, we practiced principles to bring harmony into all these. Here in the second degree, we forgot about those things. Got totally involved in practicing the principles, and discovered that all these other things were added. They were included. And so it's really quite wonderful. We're rolling along on all cylinders, and our life is harmonious. We feel like we've entered the land of milk and honey. Everything is great. We feel kind of maybe puffed up a little bit because these principles work, and we're working them, and we know it. Now, here in the second degree, we feel so good about the harmony of every area of our life that, and the ability we have of practicing meditation to meet any problem, we feel like, well, we've arrived, really. We have reached the promised land. Everything is just about perfect. That's the danger time, according to Joel, and I can tell you from my experience, that's the danger time. Because what we are doing is we are coasting. We are here in the second degree, and it's taken us many years to get here, and so now we're just resting, we're coasting. Life is good. We've arrived. However, there's something called God that won't let us stand still forever. And so if we coast here, if we rest here in the second degree for too long, we will have suddenly some very, very serious problems show up. They just come. And we don't understand it. Wow, I've been practicing these principles for 17 years, or 12 years now, or even 25 years. Why did this come? I don't understand it. This is one of those incurable diseases. The doctor's telling me he's going to cut off this or that. Or the doctor's telling me there's no hope. It's incurable. Oh, I don't understand. I thought my relationship, my marriage was perfect. I thought the relationship I had with my partner was really good. Suddenly, there's seems to be insurmountable difficulties. What do they call that? Irreconcilable differences? Where did that come from? I thought everything was good. Oh my God, how could this be? I've been doing this for 14 years, for 22 years, and they just laid me off. I only have 10 years to go to be retired and collect my pension, and I've been laid off. The company's dissolving. There are no pensions. My God, what am I going to do? I'm too old to be hired anywhere. Yes, now the real scary problems come to our door. Because we have been coasting, we have gotten so comfortable here in the second degree that, well, we felt we're in the promised land. What else is there to do? All that God has is mine, and I'm very comfortable. Here, towards the end of the second degree, we must decide if we will really serve God completely, or all of this mammon that's surrounding us. Will we stop here in harmonious living? Or will we continue to die daily to a personal sense of self? Because here at the end of the second degree, we still have a personal sense of self. Oh, it was harmonious for a long time, and very spiritual, I might add. But it's still a personal sense of self. And God is saying, you can't rest here. You must go on. Come up higher. And so we return back to the books. What have I missed? How come this really serious problem has come to me, and I can't seem to meet it? Even practicing these spiritual healing principles, while I've called a couple of practitioners that are also meditating for me, and it doesn't seem to want to budge. This is very serious when you're walking through it, I'm telling you. And so we have come to close to the end of our second degree. If we handle this correctly, we will move into, well, we will be initiated into the third degree. If we handle this incorrectly, it may cost us our personal sense of life. We might even die from this terminal illness. Here is really the point of transition of deciding to, I've come as far as I'm going to in this lifetime, or I'm going to go the whole distance. I'm going to really die to a personal sense of self. Here in the second degree, we have learned that there is a divine presence and that it is within our consciousness, and that we only need to become still, really still, enter the silence, and instead of knowing any truth with our mind, truth is beginning to flow, to bubble up from within our consciousness. It flows out to our outer awareness from the Father within. And now here, towards the end of the second degree, we're learning that we're going to die completely so that Christ may live its life. We start to look seriously at Paul's statement, I live, yet not I, Christ liveth in me. We return to the books or the teachers, or the talks, or a teacher if we have one. And we ask, what do we have to do now? I want to go forward. Here in the second degree, towards the end of the second degree, the initiation that brings you to the third degree is a true dark night of the soul. Joel said that many people would ask him how to have initiation, and he would smile a little sadly because he realized there's no way they could do this. There's still a human sense of self. And so he would smile a little sadly and wonder what these people who were asking for initiation would do if they came up upon real initiation and some of the fiery trials that we have to go through. And so again, you are not required to try to bring yourself into the third degree. You continue to practice everything you know in the second degree without any thought of the third degree, and you will be brought to this point of initiation. Here is where you have to throw everything you have into this work. Now, I hate to end on a serious note like this, but it is serious. But remember, you've had anywhere from 2 to 22 years of harmonious living. Everything's been wonderful. You thought you had arrived and that that's all there was to it. You may have even read some of the books that are helpful in the third degree and pondered over it. But you never really got to the place of dying completely to a personal sense of self. And so God, the Christ within you, the Father, whatever you want to call it, is saying, it's time, my son. It's time, my daughter. You must come up higher now. Now, God does not send a terminal illness. I don't want you to misunderstand that. God does not lay you off of work. God does not destroy your relationship. No. No, that had nothing to do with God. That is still this impersonal nothingness called hypnotism. You left the door open because you continued to entertain a personal sense of life. You continue to see a personal sense of life when you look at yourself or look at others around you. And so, this is what, where God enters the picture, is once you have seen, I've left this door open. I thought I had arrived, but there's still a personal sense of self here. It's more subtle, but it's still here. Once you get to that point, it's God that steps in with God's grace to allow that personal sense of self to be dissolved, to allow you to come into an awareness of your true identity. And then you are above the belief in good and evil, outside of the law and under grace. And then Christ lives itself as you. And there are no more problems of your own. Okay, so at the end of the second degree, you are again shown that there's much more to be done. And I wanted to look at one other thing here in this third book of the second degree, in the contemplative life. He says, commonly accepted metaphysics today teaches the rejection and denial of the appearance of evil and the realization of its unreal nature. But in the truly spiritual life, we have to go beyond merely rejecting evil as error, because we also have to deny reality to that which appears as good. Ah, we say at the end of the second degree. Ah, I treated all of these errors, but I still accepted a good wife, a good job, my good health. Now, here I'm beginning to see all of it is illusion. There is no personal anything or anyone. You see, here at the third degree, here at the end of the second degree, in this initiation into the third degree, we are again going to make yet another transition. In fact, so much so that we're going to unlearn everything we've learned in the second degree. And so he says, we also have to deny reality to that which appears as good. We have to unsee the humanly good appearances to the same degree that we unsee the humanly evil ones. Spiritually discerned, there is no good or evil. And it is on this premise that the entire spiritual universe is built. The discipline on this path now lies in rejecting every appearance, whether good or evil, in the realization that whatever it is that is of God is invisible to the human senses. And so we return to the drawing board and we say to ourselves, oh my goodness, I'm not done. I'm going to now have to find out what it means to really die daily, die completely to a personal sense of self. I'm going to have to find out what it means to see no bad, but also see no good. I'm going to have to find out what it means to rise completely into Christ consciousness, so that I live, yet not I, but Christ. We are now ready to enter the third degree.